With the BA2 variant spreading, COVID-19 case numbers are ticking back up in North Carolina, and mask mandates are coming back in a couple of local schools. Carrboro High School has reinstated its mask mandate effective today after identifying a cluster of 30 cases, about half of which were likely connected to last weekend's prom. Hillsborough Elementary School has also reinstated the mask mandate after identifying 9 new cases in the last week. Both schools will be requiring masks through at least next Friday, April 22nd. And of course, they're reminding everyone to keep taking those basic precautions otherwise, too. Stay up to date on your COVID shots, get tested if you've been exposed, and stay home if you're sick. Statewide, health officials reported 4,741 new cases in the last week. That's up from just over 3,000 the week before. That is, though, still way down from the peak of the Omicron wave when the state was seeing more than 100,000 new cases a week. And hospitalizations are still dropping in North Carolina, though an uptick in new cases usually signals an uptick in hospitalizations in the coming weeks. Turning to police news, Chapel Hill officials are investigating a death on Dickens Court near Sage Road. This happened yesterday, related to a vehicle fire that was reported around 4 p.m. No details beyond that yet, but if you have any information, call 911 or contact Chapel Hill Police directly. State-level news, former GOP Congressman and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows has been removed from North Carolina voter rolls following revelations that he was registered to vote at a mobile home in Macon County that he did not own and never lived in. County officials removed him from the rolls after documents showed he voted in Virginia in 2021. Meadows, of course, frequently raised the prospect of voter fraud both before and after the 2020 election. And in the courts, a judge yesterday heard arguments in the ongoing Leandro case revolving around North Carolina's constitutional obligation to provide all children with access to a sound basic education. Judge Michael Robinson is deciding whether to uphold an earlier order directing the state to allocate $1.75 billion in funds to meet that obligation. The new state budget includes about half that money, and Republican lawmakers say it's not the court's job to get involved beyond that. NNO reports Robinson will issue a ruling by next Thursday, and it will likely go to the state Supreme Court after that. Closer to home, Chatham County officials are still celebrating after a massive economic development announcement earlier this month. The Vietnamese electric car company VinFast is setting up a $4 billion manufacturing headquarters just outside Moncure, creating around 7,500 jobs. But the good news also creates new challenges, most notably the specter of rising housing costs as more and more people move to the area. Former Pittsburgh Mayor Randy Voller is now the publisher of the Chatham County Line Monthly. He joined 97.9 The Hill this week to share his thoughts about what should happen next.
People who are going to be working there are going to need places to live, which is, you know, why in these elections that are coming up, it's such a key question for county commissioners or municipal folks. You know, what do people believe are going to keep points in improving the housing affordability in our area? I mean, I'm hearing things that the average house right now is getting, you know, 4 or 5 offers on it with due diligence monies or bidding it up before it's accepted. You know, I've been in the real estate business here since 1992. I don't remember it ever being like this. This is definitely a seller's market, but we're in a very strange place where supply is extremely constricted and demand is through the roof. And this is wonderful that we're going to get this company moving to the area, especially putting out electric vehicles. At the same time, we're also getting Toyota moving in that mega site that's north of Siler City, near Liberty and Randolph County, south of Greensboro. So, you know, we might be the electric vehicle hub or center of the United States if both of these things get going and start pumping out batteries and cars. But at the same time, we're really going to have to think about how we address that affordability given the fact that we don't have supply.
That's Randy Voller speaking there. You can get the full conversation in the News on the Hill section of our website, chapelboro.com. Other bits of local news, Owassa reported a wastewater overflow yesterday morning on Turvey Court near Irwin Road. Close to 3,000 gallons of untreated wastewater wound up in Booker Creek, caused by grease clogging up the sewer line. Owassa officials are reminding residents not to put grease or fats or oils down the drain. Throw that in the trash instead. And the Chapel Hill Police Department department has signed on to a national pledge to promote women in law enforcement. The 30 by 30 pledge sets a goal for women to make up 30% of police recruit classes by the year 2030. Finally, we head to campus, where UNC faculty members are once again sounding the alarm about free speech and privacy concerns after new revelations that a university inquiry into a suspected data breach went deeper than originally believed.
The main concern is not that there was a violation, but rather the concern here is twofold, that the search and the questioning of the professors was done in apparent retaliation for expressing public concerns, and that email searches, even if technically permitted, can have a substantial chilling effect on the freedom of speech and association.
That's UNC Constitutional Law Professor Mary Rose Papandreou speaking last week at a meeting of the UNC Faculty Council. At issue is what happened last year when details of a donor agreement were made public amidst the fight over Nicole Hannah Jones' application for a tenured position in the Hussman School of Journalism and Media. The donor agreement was with Walter Hussman, after whom the school is named. Hussman had reportedly put some pressure on members of the Board of Trustees to deny her tenure request. UNC later acknowledged that the donor agreement was public record, but the university still launched an inquiry into what was described as a data breach, and as part of the inquiry, UNC searched the email accounts of some of the professors who'd been most vocally critical of the university's handling of the situation. And earlier this month, NC Policy Watch reported that the search went beyond emails. New documents show that UNC also searched faculty members' computer backup systems as well. That, in and of itself, was not illegal. Papandreou said UNC's action was in line with the university's privacy of electronic information policy.
The policy states very clearly, wherever possible in a public setting, individuals' privacy should be preserved. However, there is no guarantee of privacy or confidentiality for data stored or messages stored or sent on university-owned equipment.
But Papandreou added that UNC may have violated faculty members' free speech rights if the search was meant to be an act of retaliation for speaking out.
It would not make any sense and would likely be unconstitutional to punish a faculty member for sharing the contents of a donor agreement if that agreement is a matter of public record.
And Papandreou further said that university policy also does not prohibit faculty members from revealing details of agreements even when they're confidential. Moreover, while UNC's privacy policy is designed to set limits on when officials may search faculty emails, Papandreou says one provision of that policy is so vaguely worded that it effectively allows searches in any circumstance at all.
Provision C allows the university to look at the email to retrieve or review, for university purposes, university-related information. I wouldn't know how to put a limiting construction on that.
And even if UNC is allowed to do something, it's also a separate question whether it should. UNC law professor Eric Muller spoke on that at the faculty council meeting.
When my daughters were in high school, I had the authority to go into their rooms at any time and search around, but I didn't do it because I was concerned about my relationship with my daughters. I really hope that as we continue this discussion, that there will be ample reflection on the really, frankly, devastating impact that this can have on the sense that faculty have of being secure in their own place of employment.
Speaking to the faculty council, Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz denied that any faculty member was ever under investigation, nor were any of UNC's actions taken with the intent of punishment or retaliation.
I want to be clear that there was no investigation. This was an inquiry. And if something is revealed there, that's the point at which an investigation might begin. A data inquiry was conducted to determine how a release of a donor agreement had occurred. And the focus of that inquiry was always on information relevant to the agreement, not employee speech in any way.
But faculty chair Mimi Chapman pushed back on the distinction Guskowitz drew between an inquiry and an investigation.
I don't know that there is a distinction in how that feels to the faculty member.
And Mueller added that even an inquiry may not have been necessary.
System security is not an absolute value. The fact that this may have been intended to investigate or to determine the existence of a breach of system security in and of itself doesn't mean you have to do something about it. And it doesn't dictate what it is you have to do.
There does seem to be a general consensus that the existing privacy policy likely needs to be revised. Chancellor Guskowitz and Provost Chris Clemens both told the Faculty Council that those discussions are already starting to get underway. And Clemens said he'd be looking to faculty members to take the lead.
I think there's no doubt we are going to be looking at the policy. I'm already looking at the policy and I have some suggestions. But we don't need one set of suggestions from me. What we need are good ideas from the faculty and through the Faculty Council Committee, I think.
Daily Tar Heel reports UNC's electronic privacy policy has not been revised since 2002. Visit our website, chapelboro.com, for more local news, including details about a new mural on Henderson Street that's going up to celebrate the upcoming Hip Hop South Festival next weekend. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by Chapel Hill Tire. Huge news yesterday for UNC men's basketball. Armando Bacot is coming back for his senior year at Carolina. Bacot issued a statement yesterday that simply read, "I'm back." Nothing more to it than that. He did have a bit more to say in a video he shared on Twitter.
The University of North Carolina has been great to me. Getting the full Tar Heel experience this year with the fans and the big wins and the celebrations is something I will never forget. The chance I received to wear the North Carolina jersey and play for that name on the front is special to me. I look forward to coming back in the summers as an alum, playing pickup with the current guys and teaching them the same things that we were taught by the former players. That's my responsibility as part of the Carolina family. But I'm not ready to do that just yet. This year's experience showed me that I do not want to miss the chance to do it again next season. On the court, we got so close this year. I know there are no guarantees, but I want the opportunity to play in those big games, to keep Carolina on that national stage, and to have the chance to do what Coach Davis has talked about since his first day on the job, put another banner in the Smith Center. My Carolina story isn't finished just yet. Next season starts right now. My name is Armando Bacot, and I'm a Tar Heel.
That's Armando Bacot there. Full statement from him on Twitter. He's already made his mark on Carolina basketball history. Last season alone, first team All-ACC honors. He was the only player in the conference to average a double-double. He tied David Robinson's all-time Division I record with 31 double-doubles in a single season and, of course, led UNC to the NCAA final. In a statement, head coach Hubert Davis called Bacot, quote, the perfect example of what a Carolina player strives to be. Visit our website, chapelboro.com, for more on Bacot's decision, including reactions from social media. He's just one of many Tar Heels who are having to make quick decisions about their future. We also got word yesterday from two other Tar Heels, Anthony Harris and Dawson Garcia. They are both planning to enter the transfer portal. Harris played 35 games but struggled with injuries in his two seasons in Chapel Hill. He was out since January in the second half of the year. Same story with Garcia. He missed the last couple of months of the season as well, as he was up with his family in Minnesota. They're having issues up there, and he's transferring to be closer to his family next season. The UNC women's tennis team held steady at number one yet again in this week's ITA rankings. Fiona Crawley and Elizabeth Scotty also held the top spot in doubles. The Tar Heels are in Durham tomorrow evening for a meet against Duke. In track and field, All-ACC academic honors for six Tar Heels. Congrats to Sam Corley, Kyle Reinheimer, and Parker Wolf on the men's side, and Bryn Brown, Anna Kiefer, and Alex Potts on the women's side. In action today, top-ranked UNC women's lacrosse looking to stay unbeaten. They're on the road at number 15 Virginia tonight at 8, and UNC women's golf is also in action today down in South Carolina for the ACC championships. In baseball, the Durham Bulls got their first home win of the season, 10-5 over Jacksonville last night. Game 3 of that series is tonight at 6:35, weather permitting. We do have rain in the forecast. And the Carolina Hurricanes are back in action tonight, hosting the Red Wings at 7. That's indoors, so it doesn't matter what the weather is.